I am here to talk about what happened in my relationship with Army Hammer.
I haven't really digested this one. I have a fantasy about having someone prove their love and devotion and tying them up in a public place at night and making their body free use and seeing if they will f*** strangers for me.
My bet was going to involve showing up at your place and completely tying you up and incapacitating you and then being able to do whatever I wanted to every single hole in your body until I was done with you.
I felt like this was all perfect. This was amazing.
He would say things, God, you're so perfect.
How could you be this beautiful, this smart, so funny?
It's like you're made for me.
But then things changed. He pushes your boundaries a little bit at a time. You're his, completely.
These are messages that are being sent literally within seconds of each other.
I mean, he said, I'm 100% a cannibal. I'm freaking out.
It was all he wanted to ever talk about.
Then I get a note that says I'm gonna bite the f*** out of you. And he was just like acted mad.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. I'm Lisa Zambetti. I'm a casting director. I have a real interest in real crime and the minds that solve those crimes. And with me today is...
Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard, founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service and host of the podcast Crime Analysts.
And I'm Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor, writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds, and also involved with Criminal Minds Season 16 on Paramount Plus called Criminal Minds Evolution.
You put your great radio voice on.
Yes. My goodness.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I like that voice a lot.
Thank you. So today we're here to talk about a different kind of entertainer. And Lisa, you brought this to our attention. You read about this quite a while ago, didn't you?
Well, you know, there's an actor who's been in the news lately. Much controversy around him, and there's a documentary around him that we're going to mention. But, you know, a long time ago, I guess in 2017, I read this article, and it's called 10 Long Years of Trying to Make Army Hammer Happen. And it's by the wonderful writer Anne Helen Peterson. And she wrote this article way before any of the more salacious and possibly criminal allegations about this actor came forward. And her point was, why do the powers that be in Hollywood keep trying to make him a star? And her larger point was to, why is it that white, good-looking young men are entitled to have chance after chance after chance to become big box office stars after flop, when a woman of color, you know, gets kind of one chance. And if her TV show or her film flops, that's it for her. And
really?
So that's kind of what this article was about. It went through his career and all the ups and the downs and how he made his career in the beginning playing entitled rich kids, kind of a-holes. And there was some kind of connection there to his real life story. Anyway, so it was just a really interesting article. And of course, as time has borne out, now for me, he's not even on my radar. I think I saw him in The Social Network and I never happened to watch any of his films. And we'll talk about this in a second. But his biggest claim to fame recently was Call Me By Your Name. And everybody in my queer community, even in my straight community, were like, this movie is awful.
So I never went to see it.
You know,
thank you so much for saying that.
Stephen and Danny acted the whole thing out for me. And I'm like, what, with the peach? He fucks the peach? What? I don't want to watch this. So anyway, go ahead, Jim.
Well, I don't even remember a peach in it, but I do remember a boy who was a teenager who was being groomed by an adult who was played by Armie Hammer. And I think Timothée Chalamet played a teenager. I don't know if he was a teenager when he got the role or when he acted this role, but he played a 17-year-old. And this, and Armie Hammer played an older guy who was on vacation and meets him and seduces him, basically, and has sex with him. And the kid actually like falls in love with him. And then one day Armie Hammer just disappears. And then he gets a call months later. Oh yeah, I got married today. Just want to let you know. And the kid is devastated. Well, if that were a movie about an older man and a younger girl back in the day, that would have been called the Lolita film. And Lolita is a film that showed that kind of relationship. And it was accepted then, but it is now hopefully despised. I don't know why, because it was a boy, that it was celebrated and won Academy Awards. Why? And so it disturbed me that he would play a role like that. But everybody held him up like, wow, this is groundbreaking. This is great, because it was a male-on-male relationship. And it really offended me, because it depicted the sexual victimization of a child. And let me tell you, there are laws in the United States of America that if you leave the United States, which his character did, to go to another country and have sex with a child, that would have been illegal in the United States. That's travel. That's international travel for the purposes of sexually exploiting or victimizing a child. And that is illegal in the United States. He would have been arrestable and convictable for that crime. And yet it was celebrated in this movie, and it was celebrated in Hollywood. And I was really offended by that.
I remember you talking about that movie, Jim. I didn't see it either. And I have to say, I didn't know about Armie Hammer. I didn't know he was an actor. I didn't know about his family, about the history. What I do recall is about the allegations of numerous women, actually, on Twitter, I believe it was. And the things that were circulating were about his sexual fantasies, his rape fantasies, and about cannibalism. And I remember that happening. And I guess more on my radar was him being called out again when he went to the Golden Globes and he wore a pin for Time's Up. So it's back in the Weinstein context. And lots of people called him out. He was on the red carpet. And that's when a number of the women were very angry, and quite rightly too. But now there is this documentary, a three-part docuseries, which is a Discovery Plus documentary. And it aired on Friday, the 2nd of September. And I know people in the UK are able to watch it on Sky. And Lisa, you were very keen for us to cover this. And so I did watch it. And I have to admit, and I'll be quite upfront about it, as I always am, I'm quite conflicted about it for numerous reasons, but more so because House of Effie, the victim who really was the one who came forward in 2021 and has said that he raped her and that it was brutal violence, and she put out a statement. She was incredibly upset. She's very unhappy about the documentary.
Is she?
And she is. She's very unhappy, and she made it clear to the documentarians she did not want to participate. She did not want the documentary going out there. She feels that her trauma is being exploited. And she feels that she has said no to the producers, and they kept coming back and kept asking her. And then they said that they were going to do it anyway because they didn't need her consent. She says that that's just like Armie. That's just what he did to her. And so this is where, Jim and Lisa, we see oftentimes the re-victimization of victims, don't we? Whether it's within the system. And we have to remember this ongoing, she couldn't speak out because these, what she has said is a subject to an investigation. She probably didn't want to create a problem with the investigation. And in the UK, that would have been absolutely right. She would have been told not to speak out. But the other side to it, and I'm just going to flip that script, because why I'm conflicted is that if people don't speak out, then how do other victims know that there's a problem? And then they might come forward. And we know with R. Kelly, for example, that really those charges came about because of, you know, numerous members of law enforcement, one who was in the FBI, watched the docuseries and felt so enraged about what R. Kelly had done. He then set about putting together an investigation, and he was effectively responsible for that charge. So oftentimes it can ignite a fire for the right reasons, but I do feel conflicted because for Effie, it must feel like she's being exploited because they did use her statement that she made, which I think is available on YouTube, and also various posts, and she feels very aggrieved about that. I don't know what your views are, Lisa.
So we're talking about House of Hammer. I don't know if we said the name. This is a docuseries by Ellie Hakami and Julian P. Hobbs. And I agree, Laura. I am very conflicted, and maybe you can help me understand why. Because, of course, I want to hear, and they do, platform victims who willingly came forward and told their story about their intimate relationships with Armie Hammer and the disturbing details about it. And it's really two different documentaries, because one is, and I think that one of them is much stronger than the other. So there's one about present day Armie Hammer and his intimate relationships. And the other is about his aunt, Casey, and the legacy of the Hammer men. And I wanted to ask you about this, Laura, about generational coercive control. Now, that part of the documentary, I think, is very well done, very well researched, and deserves the light of day. This other part just seems underdeveloped and rushed and very unfair to, as you said, to Effie, who didn't want to be part of it. And she's currently, no charges have been brought against Hammer, and he denies all accusations. But this investigation is ongoing, and she probably doesn't want anything to mess that up.
Yeah, but I will say this, though. I mean, as somebody who didn't know that Effie did not want to participate, and I think the documentarians, now that you tell me this, they should have indicated that in one of those little captions. We wanted to have her participate, but she declined. However, this stuff that we're showing you is actually fair use, or whatever it is, the reason why they're able to use it without her consent. So the fact is that if she didn't participate, they should have made that known. Because I assumed, watching the documentary, that she did participate, and willingly. So learning that, yeah, that does disturb me. But I agree with you, Lauren, Lisa, because as somebody who didn't know that, I was very glad to see her statement. I didn't know it existed. I didn't know you could go on the internet and find it. I had no idea that that was out there until now. And I think it may be very difficult for her, but I hope she gets to a place, perhaps it's going to be after whatever case is resolved, that the complaint that she made against him, but I hope she gets to a place where that is not an issue anymore, where she can freely talk about what she went through if she decides to do that, and that she understands that her talking about it has saved other women and girls from the same fate. And I hope that, you know, everybody watches this and sees the gall of this guy and what he says and what he tells these girls to do and what he says he wants to do to them and what Effie said he did to her. They're just horrific things. It's not just BDSM sex like he's trying to make it out to be. What it is actual sexual assault and rape that these allegations are. Now, again, he denies it, but I don't have any reason to disbelieve the victims at this point who've come forward, and their stories are very consistent, and the behavior that they describe is very consistent with what I've seen in offenders. So there's a lot of credibility there in this cross corroboration. And I do hope that the investigation that's currently ongoing results in justice for these victims.
Please welcome Casey Hammer to the show.
Thank you.
And I know that you talk about your mother in the documentary, but around you, were there any adults who said, wait a minute, this is a kid, and this kid should not be exposed to this?
No. I mean, we are the true definition of dysfunctional. And it's, again, threats of bodily harm or retribution or disownment. I mean, there was always this, if you embarrass or do anything outside the family, and we were always photographed and surveilled, you know, the cameras by our own family. It was like they were watching every move we made.
So when the allegations against Armie Hammer were made public, did you say, of course, this is this family? How did you process it?
I wasn't surprised. And the reason I say that is because what I experienced growing up was so familiar. And it's not something, Tamron, that you just wake up one day and decide to become a monster. It's a learned behavior. And that's what this documentary shows, is it's a multi-generational abuse, a cycle.
To go back to coercive control, there's a couple of jump off points here because, you know, Jim, you sent me the screenshot showing that there is a trigger warning at the start of the docuseries saying, be advised that there are scenes of, and there's themes of, I think it says sexual abuse and domestic abuse and coercive control. And I was so pleased to see that. And of course, we talked about that. It's taken a long time to get coercive control included. And this case is absolutely about coercive control. And with coercive control, you tend to see sexual coercion. The two go hand in hand. So firstly, when we think about those women who are brave enough to speak out, it must be very validating for them to have this docuseries, Courtney and Paige and Jessica, and we're talk and Julia, and we'll talk about what they've said. But the backdrop that you mentioned, Lisa, the family. And we're to perhaps talk about that last, but that is an important context, the who he is and where he comes from. And that can't be negated. So I think it is an important context that they provide. And it was actually a TikTok star, Lauren, she goes under the TikTok handle at the Zen Blonde, who brought the two together. So I think that that's quite interesting as well, that she sort of broke the story on TikTok and it went viral. There was a book by Casey Hammer, and that book was called and is called Surviving My Birthright. And that book was written a number of years ago, but there wasn't really much pickup.
No.
So that's interesting. Perhaps we'll come back to that. But that's really about her story and about the family. And then with Armie Hammer and the allegations from multiple women, and we must remember it's multiple women. And as Jim said, when we hear what they're saying, and we're going to get into the detailed victimology and what they've said, there are very salient aspects to the behavior. And we have no reason, I have no reason to doubt the women either. But bringing those two contexts together, it was a TikToker who did that at the Zen Blonde, who then sort of had started to talk to Casey. So it really does show the power of social media, doesn't it? Then the documentarians decide they want to do a documentary on it. And we see the TikToker, Lauren, in the actual docuseries. So joining things up, making the links, I think for me, that's what this docuseries is all about, because I didn't know anything about him. I didn't know anything about the family. And there are some revelations in part three that perhaps we'll get to about the grandfather, Dr. Armand Hammer, who I saw some of the issues that he was responsible for in the UK, but I didn't know it trapped back to him. And we're going to talk about what that is. So there's a lot of, for me, full circles here. And I think it is important that we do hear from victims, those who feel courageous and validated to speak out. But I also do worry about the impact of Effie and others who haven't spoken out, of feeling that they're being re-victimized all over again. And by the way, LAPD did make a comment. There was an LA Times piece that was recently published by Amy Kaufman, who wrote a very good piece. And Effie did do a short statement for her, but didn't speak directly about it, other than saying that the way they've been exploiting my trauma is disgusting. But LAPD did begin investigating Armie Hammer, and they basically have said that there is a specialist prosecutor looking at the case. And once law enforcement has completed their investigation and submits the case to our office, we'll conduct an evaluation and file criminal charges that are supported by the evidence. So when we say that there are no charges, for me, it's a no charges yet. It's not that there are no charges. So I think that's quite important. And what we do know is when people speak out, normally you get a lot more victims. And here we're talking about women who may well have come forward that we don't know anything about since the docuseries is out there. But there is controversy around the docuseries and lots of different things now that are coming up. For example, bite marks apparently are not bite marks from Armie Hammer on one of the victims. And that's just broken in the news today. But before we sort of get into that, I guess we should talk about the starting point of the victims. And maybe we talk about Courtney, first of all, because that's really who we first see in the docuseries. Mm-hmm. We know it all began with Effie, and it is important to say that she was brave enough to say something. And I do just want to make the point that legally the documentarians can use that information that she posted because it's in the public domain. Sure. But is it morally and ethically right? And right. Jim, we're documentarians, and
right.
that's the question that's eating away at me. Is it morally and ethically correct if somebody says, please do not? Because the other side to that is, would any film, would any documentary ever be made if you had to get permissions of everybody?
Right.
So that's why I keep going back and forth on it, because there is merit at times to produce something and create something that does sort of lance the boil, as it were, on in particular men's behavior. And I do take issue when people call it unsavory behavior or mm-hmm. dark side behavior, because this isn't about unsavory behavior, actually.
About
is
crime.
It?
No,
it's about criminal behavior. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so lots of things to grapple with.
I was going to say, when we first meet Courtney, I mean, I was just very struck, and I call this, I think everybody's beautiful. You're beautiful, Laura. Jim's beautiful. We're all beautiful in our own way.
Well.
But what I say, when I look at Courtney, I call her extremely commercially symmetrical, because her features are very striking, right? She's beautiful in that commercial fashion model way. And she has a very powerful presence to me. She's wearing all red. She's got this coat over her shoulders. Her hair is perfect. Her nails are perfect. And she just looks like somebody who nobody would ever be able to take control of. She's a business owner. She's whip smart. She could probably have any man or woman that she wanted. She doesn't look like, and I'm putting in inverted commas, a victim, right? And I just wonder.
Well, which shows you that anybody could be victimized. Anybody can. Well, if you look at his grooming process and his coercive control methodology, I think that that answers the question of why her. And she said right away, he started sharing intimate details of his life and love bombing her. And she felt compelled to do the same, to share intimate details of her life, and which later were used against her. But she said he was so vulnerable. I wanted to help him. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the love bombing, oh, you're so amazing. You've changed my life. I can't live without you, all that kind of stuff. And so it's things we've seen before. But here's a guy who, rather than being some dumpy clown that we saw in the Love Fraud, this is somebody who's actually handsome. He's, you know, comes from billionaire family, and he has Hollywood credits to his name. I mean, he's a Hollywood actor. So he's got all that in his favor, despite the fact that he'd have you believe that he's sort of a victim. Everybody was against him. He's got all this stacked up against him, which is just complete and utter bullshit. He's led a privileged life since the minute he was born.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly a silver spoon kid, isn't he? There's no two ways about that in who he is. And he's archetypally very good looking. You're not just talking, you know, he is a good looking guy. And I agree with you, Lisa, when Courtney comes on, incredibly well put together, very eloquent, very powerful, actually, in the way that she speaks. And I believe that he has a victim preferential type. So I think that the women are chosen for a particular reason, as we always know. But I want to take a back step of how they met, because they actually met briefly in real life first, whereas with other women, he targets them online.
Mm.
And, you know, the first thing to say about that is that there was no big moment between them when they met in a bar in 2019, but he followed up, found her on Instagram and messages her. And the process was quite slow in reality of them getting to know each other before anything else. And she sees that he's got a blue tick, right? And I do want to say something about blue ticks, because people immediately think blue tick or lots of followers. And we talked about this with Tinder Swindler, you know, that someone's safe. That doesn't mean to say that they're safe just because they've got the blue check. Second to that, she did her due diligence. She was looking online. She did find out he was married. She did ask him questions about that. Every time she asked him something, he assuaged her concerns. So he managed to quiet her instincts when things weren't quite right. And yes, he did tell her that he had been separated for 2 years, even though he had two children, and he lied to her. And that's what I mean by quietening her mind. Every time there was a question mark, he would say the right thing. But he shares vulnerability with her, their trauma. She then shares vulnerability. And I see that a lot in cases that you feel safe because someone is telling you something, where actually it's a red flag. If someone tells you something too early before a trust bond or intimacy is established, it's a red flag. Because intimacy takes time. You can't just, you know, somebody who just opens up and tells you their whole life story, that's unusual for that to happen immediately when you haven't really seen each other in real life or spent time together. Mm-hmm. But then he starts complimenting her, making her feel safe, but also the compliments, the love bombing. And in fact, this episode is called Love Bomb, isn't it? Which, again, I'm really pleased that the language is getting out there. So for me, that was... they were big tick marks for the documentarians that they're using the right language. They're getting it in the zeitgeist. They're letting Courtney tell her story. Very powerful. But also the fact that when she says about him, they haven't met yet. She's gone away to, I think it was the Hamptons. He turns up at her property in Dallas.
That was creepy. So
creepy. Right? So creepy. I mean,
and not, she's, the first, not the last creepy thing he did.
Not the last creepy thing, but these sorts of things where he's saying that he's on the scent of her, or I'm trying to find your scent. And she initially feels this is creepy and scary. He then quietens her concerns again. And she then starts to think that this is flattering. But all the time, the thought that's in her head, that means her instinct was saying it's a problem. But he leaves her a note, not a romantic note, but a note that basically says, I want to bite the fuck out of you, or I'm going to bite the fuck out of you. I mean, what most women would think about that, is it romantic gesture?
Run away!
Run for the hills.
Right. We're not judging her for that. That to us is a real big red flag. And she saw it in a different light because she thought he was being romantic.
But this is the issue, Jim and Lisa. And it's a societal issue. It's not an individual person issue. It's how girls are groomed about what romance is. It's about how we're led to believe that this is a romantic gesture versus actually this is something that's freaking creepy. In the UK, for example, and I use this image as an example when I'm training people, and I just did it this week, we had an advert for Milk Tray chocolates. Okay. And it was a balaclava clad man, a man fully dressed in black, swinging through a woman's window in the middle of the night to leave these chocolates for her, right? That's what was depicted as romance. I can tell you no woman came up with that concept. It was absolutely a male concept.
God.
Exactly. When you have these things in the cultural zeitgeist of what romance is, it's no wonder women initially feel, shit, this is scary. And then they start to, okay, well, no, this is quite flattering, actually. No, it's just a gesture. He's just a bit unusual. It's because he likes me and he's just expressing himself. So it's not a judgment on Courtney. It's also a bigger judgment about how girls and women are groomed about what romance looks like.
Well, there's so much more in this very brief docuseries, 3 episodes, to talk about because we're going to get into the Armand Hammer family and their history, which is disturbing. But we want to thank everybody for listening. Until next time. This is Real Crime Profile, signing off.
Real Crime Profile was created by Jim Clementi, Laura Richards, and Lisa Zambetti. Produced by Laura Richards, Lisa Zambetti, Jim Clementi, and XG Productions, and distributed by Wondery. Editing by Nick Jaworski at Podcast Monster. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba.